2011. We'll be coming back to you for a chance to report the results of that evaluation and also to have a discussion about whether any further regulation of the system is necessary to meet our city goals. So to reach our goals, we need to change how businesses handle their garbage here in Portland. They're already doing a great job. They're recycling 60% or more, but there's still quite a bit of material that's being thrown away. And Commissioner Saltzman mentioned this. We've got, when you look at the garbage and what businesses are throwing away, we've got 29% food in that garbage. About 26% is either paper or other common recyclables that would be easily recycled in our system. And about 20% is construction waste. So the plan is going to raise the bar for businesses. We want businesses to improve their recycling practices, and we're going to be requiring that they reach for a 75% recycling rate. We've talked about what's in the garbage. That's what will be the focus of these new recycling requirements for business. The largest food businesses will be required to collect their food waste for composting. All businesses in Portland will have to recycle all their paper and containers. And construction jobs valued at more than $50,000 will need to recycle 75% of their waste. Now, in this strategy, businesses will get more help, but they also must meet these higher expectations. We'll be expanding our educational and technical assistance efforts to help businesses. We'll have dedicated staff and resources for greater monitoring and enforcement, though frankly, penalties will be the option of last resort. Instead, we want to rely on a system of best management practices and phase in enforcement only after businesses have had a chance to come into compliance. We don't want to penalize businesses that are making a good faith effort to reach these goals. Garbage haulers are also critical to meeting our 75% recycling goal, and the commercial strategy sets some expectations for them as well. Haulers must show that they can provide services to meet the new recycling standards. They have to demonstrate that they have the right trucks, equipment, and staff to provide that full range of services. And we're also asking that haulers offer every one of their customers a service package so that each business can achieve a 75% recycling goal. And in many cases, this may mean providing food waste collection to their business customers that need it. As part of the package today, we're also asking you to approve the first of a couple sets of code changes that are needed to implement the goals from our commercial strategy. And so that's a companion ordinance that you have before you today. I just wanted to outline some of those provisions. The first is that it's amending our current code and the declaration of policy there to be consistent with the goals of the plan itself. Secondly, it's going to increase the commercial tonnage fee from $3.80 a ton to $5.80 a ton as proposed in our 2008-2009 budget submittal. These revenues will fund additional staff to provide the recycling technical assistance that I mentioned and provide funding to the Bureau of Development Services for monitoring containers in the right-of-way. The ordinance also includes, let me back up for just a minute about that commercial tonnage fee. We're also planning to review how that fee is collected. We want to make sure that there's an equitable application of the fee to a broader array of companies that deliver solid waste to our transfer stations. And finally, the ordinance will increase the permit application fee that hauling companies pay each year from $60 a year to $350 a year, and that will more accurately reflect the cost of reviewing and processing those permit applications. So the next steps are for us to engage the business community in moving these requirements forward. We want to actually set up some technical advisory committees with business representatives to help us figure out the nuts and bolts of implementing these policies. We'll also be stepping up outreach to the business community to let them know about these changes and the assistance that city staff can provide them. And finally, we'll be working with the hauling companies to make sure they can meet the needs of their business customers. We feel this strategy will produce significant improvements in the recycling performance of our commercial system, and we urge you to adopt the package before you today. We'd be happy to take any questions. Thank you.
Did you have any remarks, Chris? Or, no.
Questions?
Thank you.
Thanks.
Okay, thank you.
How many folks have signed up to testify on this? 11.
Okay, please call the first three. Thanks for being here, folks. When you speak, state your name for the record, and you each have 3 minutes.
Good afternoon, Mr. Mayor, councilors, commissioners. My name is John Torino. I am the executive director for the Alliance of Portland Neighborhood Business Associations, APNBA for short. The APNBA is in favor of increasing the amount of material that businesses recycle. We believe that the effective education programs and commitment strategies that support the development of new daily habits and personal motivation that will lead to an increase in waste prevention and recycling activities are the most effective ways to achieve the Portland Recycle Plan goals with the least cost and regulatory impact on small businesses. We support changes to the residential franchise agreement that will require that all residential franchisees honor any request for residential rates for small commercial customers in their franchise area who request once-a-week collection of a service level already established at the residential rate. We believe the strategy of offering smaller neighborhood business customers the option for service and rates under the residential franchises where the services and rates are favorable is actually a very good one. We're willing to promote the Portland Recycles Plan to our member business districts organizations so that they can choose to pledge a commitment to meeting the new recycling mandates and promote compliance within their membership. We'd like to be represented on the Administrative Rules Committee to help with the details, and we look forward to using the training and educational materials that the city will provide to interested business organizations to support greater business-to-business outreach for the plan.
My name is Allison Dennis. I'm the director of supply chain for Burgerville, a chain of 39 quick service restaurants in Oregon and Washington. My job is to connect the links of our supply chain from the source to the kitchen to the guest to the compost bin. And want to just take a couple minutes today to share Burgerville's story and how Portland Compost and the Blue Works program were a significant part of our success. Tomorrow's an important day for our supply chain. It's the one-year anniversary of the inception of our current composting and recycling program. I want to introduce Amaranth Wilson. She's in the gallery. A year ago today, she was an assistant manager serving in one of our Burgerville locations. She had a rogue composting and recycling program going on under the radar of the home office. I found out about Amaranth and found a way to have her come and join me in designing and rolling out a program company-wide. She did that with the direct support of Blue Works and Portland Compost's resources. Has very high praise to share about the quality of the tools that she was given, and it allowed us to continue the under the radar streak. We didn't have to make a big budget request outside of her time to get her off and rolling and designing a program for the whole company. Flash forward to today, Amaranth, through that partnership, has 36 of our 39 locations participating in commercial recycling. 20 are participating in commercial composting. Give her two more weeks and she'll have 21 on board. 8 of the 9 locations in the Portland area are composting and recycling. And again, in 2 more weeks, all 9 will be active participants. Using Portland Compost provided tools, Amaranth is now working in outlying communities that don't currently have access to those programs to use those same tools to drive change in other communities as well. And she's saving us money. Through her efforts so far, we're saving about $50,000 annually in reduced hauling fees with a goal of about $100,000 annually once her whole program is rolled out company-wide. On a more personal note, I just want to share that supporting Amaranth in this work has been the most moving experience I've had as a manager of people to see how she empowers talent throughout our restaurants to transform the action of, it's like the least glamorous job you could have dealing with fast food garbage, to transform that action into a world-changing, meaningful activity for our crews. I applaud her and the Portland programs for getting her off and rolling. Thanks.
Hi, I'm Juliet Hyams. I live at 2324 Northwest Marshall, and I'm here today as president of the Northwest District Association. And I'm here because we really want to see a commercial franchising system. In fact, we asked for it 3 years ago, and we're hoping that we won't wait until 2011 because we fear that it will continue to jeopardize the livability and the retention of families in the inner city if we continue to live with the kind of noise and excess trucks. And instead of reading this whole letter that I submitted to you, I'll just hit the benefits of what we think a franchising system would be. Quieter service and easier identification of those who exceed noise limits. That means no more people running down the streets in their bathrobes in the middle of the night trying to figure out which hauler woke them up. More effective enforcement of recycling goals, since you could more easily identify haulers who didn't abide by recycling standards, and less driving by garbage trucks, which amounts to safer streets, fewer emissions, and less wear and tear on the roads and need for frequent repairs. So we hope that you will take this under advisement, and I'll let you hear from some of my neighbors next. Thank you.
Thanks, folks.
Next, we have Paige Stockwell, Renee Spears, Greg Peden. They'll be followed by Zephyr, Brian Heiberg, and Adam Winston.
Thanks for being here, folks. When you speak, state your name for the record. You each have 3 minutes. Let me begin there.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor, commissioners. Thank you for having me here. My name is Paige Stockwell, and I live in a mixed-use neighborhood on Northwest Irving Street. On my street, between 18th and 21st Avenues, there are 4 single-family homes, 7 multifamily condo apartment buildings, and 4 businesses or institutions. As far as I can tell, each of the 11 commercial and multifamily customers is served by a different hauler, and in some cases by several different haulers. This means up to 15 garbage trucks a day passing up and down the street, which is not really a through street, some for pickups and some traveling between stops elsewhere in the neighborhood. I have served for the last 8 years on the Public Safety and Livability Committee of the Northwest District Association. At my first meeting, it became clear that the noise, traffic congestion, and air pollution associated with the collection of garbage under the current unfranchised system were major irritants to people who lived in the neighborhood. We began to try to solve these problems in September 2001 by meeting with the city's noise control people. And a franchise system was first proposed in early 2005. No decision was made, but the issue was put before City Council again in August 2007. It now appears that franchising is no longer an option, or at least a very distant one. The issues of noise, traffic, and pollution are a lot more important than you might think. Often mentioned is the fact there are not many complaints about noise associated with garbage pickups, but this is understandable given the difficulty in making a report. To make a complaint, one has to get out of bed at 4 a.m., get dressed, and run to the source of the noise to identify the hauler and address and the address of the customer. It is virtually impossible to complete the process before the hauler moves on to the next pickup, which may be several blocks away. The one time that I was successful in gathering the required information, the hauler disputed my report, and I was advised that the next time I should take a photo with a camera which records the time and date. A franchise system for commercial and multifamily pickups would make it much easier to determine who makes what noise where, and it would also make enforcement of recycling goals much more effective. A stated goal of our city government is the creation of a dense, sustainable urban environment. In our neighborhood, Portland's most densely occupied, the bars stay open until 2:30 in the morning, which means that the last loud street conversation ends with slamming car doors at 3 a.m. Then garbage trucks, which are even louder, move in an hour later. Later in the day, there are often as many as 4 trucks picking up garbage in a one-block stretch, which creates noise, traffic hazards, and pollution. I have to ask you if this is a suitable environment for a family with children. Obviously not. On my street, several families with young children have already moved away, often citing nighttime noise and daytime traffic as some of the principal reasons for doing so. I would like to point out that the issue here is not efficiency, but the issue is livability. I urge you to reconsider the advantages of a franchise to be implemented as soon as possible before it becomes too late to convince people that ours is a livable neighborhood and part of a livable city. Thank you very much.
My name is Renee Spears, and I'm the president of Rose City Mortgage Specialists here in Portland. We are the nation's first socially responsible mortgage company, so recycling is at the core of our mission. We were first certified with the Office of Sustainable Development in 2005 for our recycling. And we now recycle 100% of our paper. We're a very paper-intensive industry, as you all know if you signed loan documents lately. 100% of our paper has been shredded, and the cost for our company for 27 employees is only $40 a month. So it's very, very minimal to end that paper shredded and recycled. It has been very easy for us to make changes, to have everything in our office recycled. We have recycle boxes at every employee's desk. We buy 100% recycled paper. Most of all, we've changed our business practices to scan and email everything to eliminate the paper printing to begin with. Loans are submitted electronically, and more lenders are accepting those loans, so we've actually made changes in the industry from how we're doing our business. Recently, we have instituted for our office food a worm recycling bin in our kitchen. And so all of our food scraps now go into the worm recycling bin, and so we have no waste at all that comes out of our office. So thank you for supporting this measure.
Wow. Mr. Mayor, members of the council, my name is Greg Pete, and I am a registered lobbyist. I'm here today representing BOMA, the Building Owners and Managers Association. BOMA supports this measure, and proud to say that as part of the community here, we think that recycling is certainly it has been for a long time an ethos of the community, and the building owners and managers and their tenants and employees are proud to be part of that. Certainly, many buildings and their tenants are already recycling at above a 75% level, and some, I think, are feel confident they're recycling close to a 100% level. We have one concern about strengthening these mandates today, but based on the comments of Ms. Anderson and Ms. O'Sullivan, I'm confident over the next couple of years as this program rolls out that we'll be able to work through those. So I'll state those here today and then look forward to ongoing conversations with them. And that's simply this, is that as we strengthen those mandates, excuse me, we are concerned that building owners are put into a regulatory management framework for their tenants. The building owners have the relationship with the haulers. The building owners are ultimately responsible for the contracts with the haulers in and out, yet it is each individual tenant business who's going to do the independent recycling of materials out of their offices. And we're concerned and unclear at this point exactly how we can comply with rules and regulations at this stage that are really the onus of the tenants to meet those mandates. Now, as I said earlier, that's our concern. I think we'll work that out. I wanted to make you aware of it today. And again, BOMA supports the direction that we're headed. Thank you.
Thank you, folks.
Next are Zephyr Throw Moose, Brian Heiberg, and Adam Winston. They'll be followed by Frank Dixon, Gene Roy, and Katie Daly.
Thanks for being here, folks. When you speak, state your name for the record. You each have 3 minutes.
Zephyr Moore, member of the One Earth Society. To be a member, all you have to do is behave as if there's only one Earth. The businesses will be recycling, and the individuals within that business are the ones who do the recycling. And it's the person who ties your shoes who has the greatest influence on recycling. And I believe that more garbage would be changed to recyclable material if it had more value. And that's why I wrote this report, The Promotion and Collection of Strategic Scrap Materials During World War II, 13 pages. And this report, The Tale of Tin, which talks about how many tin ore mines there are in America. Do you happen to know, Mayor Potter?
I don't.
You'll need to read this. There are none. Zero.
Am I disqualified?
No, okay. No. You're still in the game.
Okay.
If people if when they, rather than throwing something away, like a package of gum, before they throw it away, they will take out the 3 grams of paper and recycle the paper. Throw away only the package. Before they before they start smoking their cigarettes, they take off the plastic on the top, but virtually everybody leaves the plastic on the bottom. If they take this plastic off immediately, it's worthless. It doesn't seal the pack anymore. They throw this away. Now they're not using the oxygen fuel, tires, brakes, or pavement to move junk. And after they get finished smoking their cigarettes, they put the package in water overnight because this foil in here is a contaminant. And if they put it in the water overnight, the foil simply lifts out. Now you recycle. Of these three things, 83% is bleached white paper. So you've eliminated 83% of what was 100% waste. The plastic bottle. Well, this part isn't plastic. It's paper. If as soon as they purchased it, I mean, off the counter, they rip that off. Now they've removed 100%, or they've removed 0.5 gram of paper, and they instantly recycle that. Now there's no energy being used to move the paper. And they recycle the plastic, and it's no longer plastic and paper. It's plastic, and it's pure stuff. Who wants to clean out a peanut butter jar? Well, it's recyclable, but they don't want to clean it out. So you take some oatmeal in it, and you swish it around with a spoon, and that cleans out the peanut butter. So you've eliminated waste many times, or reduced it. A lot of other people, when you go to a garbage can, as I like at TriMet, I always go through the garbage cans, pull out bottles and things like that. Well, a lot of people throw away water. Well, it's water if they just threw it on the ground. So that education could happen right on your garbage cans. Oops, I've got a piece of paper here. To educate people to not put waste in the garbage or recyclable stuff in the garbage. Peace. I'm the one.
Okay.
One. Those weigh one. The license plate advertising, they weigh 1 pound.
I know. That was good. Sorry.
So how many tin mines are there?
Zero. Not in America. As a matter of fact, we get
how
most
many
of
in the world?
We not many, about four. We get during World War II, the Japanese attacked Pearl Harbor, and right after that, they attacked the Southwest Pacific Islands over to Indonesia. That's where we get most of our tin. And our major source of tin was cut off, and that's why recycling was such a big thing in World War II, because tin is a strategic resource.
Okay.
Mr. Mayor, commissioners, my name is Brian Heiberg. I'm a partner with my brother Bruce and our family-owned and operated garbage and recycling collection business. Our family's been providing service to Portland for over 60 years. I'm speaking today for only our company. Approximately 9 months ago, City Council directed the Office of Sustainable Development to further investigate collection options that would reduce noise, fuel use, and air pollution, while at the same time providing incentives for increasing business recycling and food scrap composting. Unfortunately, the plan presented today only addresses business recycling and composting. It does little to nothing to address the current energy and pollution crisis. Under this proposal, the system will continue to consume millions of gallons of fuel, pollute our air, and awake our sleeping neighbors unnecessarily with multiple collection vehicles driving up and down our streets at all hours of the day and night, striving to provide an efficient service in the most inefficient way. This plan also ignores the same important goals that the City Council laid out in Resolution 36423. A number of those goals were to obtain maximum efficiency, improve worker safety, and improve the performance and long-term sustainability of the solid waste and recycling system. The U.S. Bureau of Labor Statistics has issued an annual report on the 10 most dangerous jobs in America. Refuse and recyclable material collectors was listed as the fifth most dangerous. This plan does nothing to address worker safety. The city solid waste management system briefing report states the competitive system, quote, does not give adequate incentives to either the business or haulers to reduce garbage or recycling more waste, and it is inequitable to the small businesses. The Noise Review Board, in its September 8, 2004 executive summary states, quote, "The board respectfully recommends the city council implement a commercial franchise system for recycling and garbage collection. The Noise Review Board learned that all of the communities surrounding the city of Portland use a commercial franchise system, as do many major cities in other states. The idea is not unusual and should not be regarded as unfriendly to business, since this model is used throughout Oregon and is common elsewhere," end quote. The city's own economists estimated 30% reduction in miles traveled and an overall savings of 6% with a franchise system. A franchise system would effectively and efficiently accomplish all of the city council's goals by promoting the sustainability of the solid waste recycling system, and that includes maximizing efficiencies, equity, and economic vitality, improving worker safety, and reducing economic and human health impacts, and at the same time provide customers with a quality, efficient, responsive system to meet their needs, just as our award-winning residential franchise collection system has done. This franchise should be made of the existing commercial haulers, large and small alike. No one should lose his or her business. We do not need more study. What Portland needs is you, our elected officials, to provide the critical leadership needed to make sure we meet our sustainable goals and make Portland a better place to live. I urge you to provide the leadership as directed and direct OSD to move forward with the franchise system using the current haulers that have been providing this service for years. Thank you.
Good afternoon. My name is Adam Winston. I'm the general manager for waste management in Oregon, located here in Portland. I don't have a prepared statement, but I have a couple comments. First, I want to say that we're very excited about this new program, and we're eager to contribute to help the city reach its goals of 75% diversion by 2015. I think this is a logical next step to get to that process, and I think that the program as outlined by the Office of Sustainable Development makes a lot of sense. There are a couple points that I want to make. There has been a lot of discussion about franchising. Should we franchise? Should we not franchise? I think it's important to understand, and obviously working with waste management, I work with, in a large company. We operate in areas that are open market, meaning you work with businesses to negotiate contracts to rate-regulated franchise markets. In my experience and tradition, what's happened, when you look at a franchise system, especially on the commercial side, it's typically goes down to maybe 4 to 6 haulers for a city this size. There are franchises, quite frankly, where you have one hauler for a whole city. Here, I think the Portland system has been very unique and very successful in that you have a mix of large and small companies, which quite frankly have worked very well together to have a very good and already achieved a very high recycling rate. Franchising in itself isn't going to guarantee that you're going to get to the next level of recycling. Obviously, it depends on infrastructure, on other regulations, so forth. I believe that, in fact, Babe mentioned about construction demolition recycling. As you probably know, that's going to continue to increase in terms of the necessary diversion because of the Metro standard that all C&D waste must be recycled, meaning or MRF, we call it, material recovery facility, by 2009. So you will see some increases just through regulation. But I do want to make sure that the people understand that when you go to, you know, talk about franchising, talk about those things, it's not going to necessarily guarantee all the things that you want to see. Typically, it does mean a vast reduction in the number of haulers. And from my perspective, I think the system is currently healthy now. I think the business community enjoys having a choice of haulers where you can get creative and also encourage private investment. All the haulers in the industry in Portland have continued to invest in infrastructure, in new trucks, et cetera, to help encourage recycling. And you know, I think we'll continue to do that. With franchising, it may limit that. So that's all the statement I had.
Thank you, folks.
Next are Frank Dixon, Gene Roy, and Katie Daly.
Excuse me.
Okay. Good afternoon, Mayor and Council. My name is Frank Dixon. I am a business owner, owner of some residential rental properties in Northwest Portland, here today speaking for myself. I have not been down to Council for a while, been a little more concerned with change in somebody in the White House and administration. You guys, relative to that, are doing a great job. So keep it up. Good. OSD is also, you know, a remarkable record. And certainly when you frame this in terms of recycling, quality of place issues tend to get pushed off to the side. And I think that's what's happened here. You know, I can remember, you know, working with Commissioner Salzman in 99 and 2000, and we had this, you know, same issue, and it's still going on. I was up last week with a failing root canal, so I was ready and waiting for the two garbage trucks that had kept waking me up at 4 in the morning, and I caught Waste Management's truck out in the back. They, you know, when I was working for Commissioner Salzman, I agreed not to send it there at 4 in the morning, but I think they've lost a little motivation. The other truck, you know, I chased that one down, but it left before I could get there. And I opened the gate to try to look at the sticker of the garbage can to see if I could identify the company. And one of the tenants was up and saw me and thought I was a peeping Tom and chased me out. And I calmed him down, and he mentioned the fact that he had also been woken up by the truck. So I don't think we have a really good complaint system here. We don't have anything to carry us over to 211. We don't have a lot of hope from the neighborhood side that we're going to see some collaboration to try to work through the problem of noise. So that's basically it. I'm here to support the NWDA folks that come down here from time to time and pay attention to quality of place issues, the kinds of things that bring prosperity to all of us in Portland. So thank you for your time.
Hi, I'm Katie Daly, Recycling Advocates, Mayor Potter, Commissioners. I was here 9 months ago talking about the plan that was presented, and this is very much a similar plan. And we're always going to have comments on the plans, but I want to preface what I say by saying I think that sometimes the perfect is the enemy of the good, and I think there are a lot of good things in this that need to be implemented now if we want to move forward to get to the goals that you set previously. 75% goal needs action needs to be taken now. So I do. We do support going forward with the recommendations in this plan, but I do want to highlight a few things that I think the plan will fall short if we don't do more down the road. First of all, the mandates need to be implemented right away, and I think that we get a lot of support from both the business community and the recycling community on that piece. But I do think that without strong enforcement, and like a complaint line or some other way of making sure that it's more than just a voluntary raising of a goal, that without more enforcement and other types of tools available, we wouldn't be able to meet. We need to make sure that that's in the details of the plan. And this plan isn't very detailed on how we're going to get to that point. And I think it's important to understand that we're going to need to make some investments in those areas. Likewise, the stage two of this plan talks about evaluating system performance against city goals and key benchmarks without those benchmarks being clearly stated in what you're adopting today. And I think that's another very important piece to know how we should move forward and when we should move forward with additional measures to evaluate whether the things that are being implemented in stage one are actually working or whether we need to do more. So I don't know when those would actually be adopted or whether they would be something adopted by council, but that's a recommendation that we have. And then I also wanted to talk about, speak to an earlier speaker about the relationship between tenants and landlords in the business sector. And although I do think the onus is obviously on the tenants on making sure that they're doing the recycling, the onus is also on the business or the building owners to make sure that they give those tenants the tools. And this is part of what I think is necessary for the city to do the outreach to both the tenants and the landlords to make sure they have both the tools and the ability to either complain or understand what their rights are as tenants or as landlords, what the expectations are from their tenants, clearly stated, and that outreach, you know, isn't going to be free. It's going to require some investment of the city to be able to get to that point. And then enforcement kind of comes along after that. So in general, Recycling Advocates is supportive of the plan. I think it lacks a lot of detail for us to know whether it can be successful to reach the goals that you guys have laid out. And we would like to see some interim benchmarks so that we can make that evaluation to know if there's more that needs to be done.
Thank you.
That's all.
Is that it? Okay. It's a resolution. Please call the vote.
Adams.
Question. Follow-up question.
Oh, yeah.
Sorry. Can you speak more to the, a little more detail about how the benchmarks will be put together, and will that come back to us, and on what timeline?
We will set up a technical advisory committee that will include all of the folks that are interested here and others, and that will enable us to set benchmarks, to set details of enforcement, and you know, other pieces of kind of reaching down into the details. So those will be done through administrative rules. If you would like us to come back, we could do that.
I think that'd be great.
Okay.
Once you have them all done.
Okay.
The current hours of, I thought we had some restrictions on hours of collection. And I don't know, maybe Bruce or Babe want to come up
with that. Well, we do have restrictions. And so part of the discussion here about franchise and noise and all of those issues is we could, without a franchise, set requirements for collection times without actually having a franchise. The issue then is one, it kind of goes both ways of safety. You're going to have more trucks during the day on the streets instead of in the middle of the night when they are, we understand, waking up people. So it's a trade-off and one that
I thought we did
continues
that.
It.
I thought we did have a window.
Council members, Bruce Walker from the Office of Sustainable Development. We have restrictions on when haulers can collect from single-family residents and apartment buildings. So there's no collection in the night before 6 a.m. What the residents accurately point out is if there's an adjoining business or somewhere on their block that needs to have collection in off hours or night hours, haulers are providing that service to address the business concern as well as the traffic concerns that Susan Anderson just pointed out.
So what happens in a situation, I think Mr. Stockwell and Mr. Dixon both pointed out situations where a hauler was picking up from a multifamily residence at 4 a.m. I mean, what is the enforcement mechanism?
Actually, when we get a complaint from that the collection occurred at a multifamily, we know who the hauler is. And we've issued penalties and we follow up on that. I believe what the issue that's being raised is not at a multi-tenant building, but instead adjoining businesses in the neighborhoods. And that's a troublesome issue. As has been pointed out, we can address that in the current system if there's time the restrictions put on, but we need to look at, in my opinion, the full picture of what those trade-offs might be of pushing trucks out into busy streets during more traveled times.
I guess that is something I would like to explore further.
Okay.
Or open that up.
You know, and this is an issue I've been interested in the past. The disruption to sleeping residents from the collections. And my issue has been less that it happens early in the morning than what I've heard people testify that it happens multiple times in the morning. I think most people understand, at least my impression has been, that it is a more efficient system to have commercial collectors work at the hours they do. What I've heard that I agree with is the inefficiency of the system is such that you may have two or three collectors hit the same block at the same time or times of the night or early morning that is very disruptive. So, which gets me back to the earlier point that I made at the prior meeting is I think it's pretty clear by now I'm in favor of franchising the system, which I think is one way of dealing with that issue. I'm not so much in favor of creating another element of congestion during the workday that restricting commercial haulers too would create. There would be more, in my view, CO2 emissions. There would be, it would be costlier because they couldn't move as quickly and efficiently. So I don't know that I'm in favor of that, although I'm in favor of the I'm sympathetic with the position Commissioner Saltzman is articulating in that it's disruptive. But I think the way we get to it is by having a franchise system.
You want a response?
Well, I'm just saying that, I mean, I'm
this is
the part that interests me in franchise. Mm-hmm.
I understand.
There are other parts, but it's that part. There are the multiple trucks in the middle of the night. I'm, as I've said in other unrelated hearings, I have a strong belief that people's homes, whether they're men or women, is their castle. And they should be able to sleep in their homes as undisturbed as at all. And I'm very sympathetic to that premise on a variety of issues that we hear here. And so, but we have to balance sometimes. We live in a dense urban area, and there are certain activities that have to happen. Garbage collecting is one of them, and I'm not sure it makes sense to create more of a CO2 footprint by requiring haulers to work later in the day, thus having to have more stops and stop and go that would be involved versus franchising the system, which I think would be a reasonable balance.
And
but I'd be interested. I mean, I'm open to listen to the argument, but that's kind of my take on it.
The issue with the franchise since our last meeting is that there would be a reduction in vehicle miles traveled, in greenhouse gas emissions, and energy use if we went to a franchise. There would be a reduction in costs, not large, probably only 5, 6, 7%. But if we did that, we'd also probably the most, you know, the best way and the best way to get to those reductions would end up with, you know, 2, 3, 4, 5 haulers at the most. And so you would have a major impact on our local hauling community. And so that is, you know, that's a major decision in terms of impact on small local businesses. So the trade-off at this point wasn't one that we wanted to do if, in fact, over the next 2 years they can show that they can get to 75% without going to a franchise. If during those 2 years that doesn't happen, I think it's the time is to come back and say everybody tried and we couldn't get there without it.
I'm sympathetic to that. We've talked about that. But I also I'm cognizant that we are a world that has to change how we do things. And certainly if we went to a franchise system in Portland, Oregon, it might not extend by much the amount of oil reserves in the world. Mm-hmm. But on the other hand, we have to begin making hard decisions as we confront what we're facing as a civilization. And I just live by the mantra, think global, act local. This is a small way to set an example of the kind of things you do to reduce your dependence on foreign oil, to reduce carbon emissions, and I think that we should probably tackle that sooner rather than later.
And OSD would be happy to implement a franchise system if that's the will of the four of you.
Good answer. Further questions? Thank you, folks. Call the vote.
Adams?
Aye.
Leonard?
Well, I will support this, but I've said, I think, my piece in terms of, I think, that OSDs and Commissioner Saltzman have done a good job in bringing forward a balanced approach to encourage recycling, to require recycling. On the other hand, it doesn't go as far as I'd like to go, and I would be willing to, and I'm not talking about necessarily thoughtlessly harming the interest of small garbage haulers. I think we should sit down and discuss what the impact would be on them and address those issues. I want to make sure anybody that's listening to that understands that that's my perspective. So I don't think we ought to just use a big stick and not also talk about how to compensate those that might have to be absorbed into a larger operation. But having said that, I do think that we've kind of ducked the problem a little bit here today. I get why I believe that this is a compromise, and I'll support it. But I'd also look forward to having further discussions towards the ends that I've described later. Aye.
Saltzman.
Well, I do think this is a fair plan, and it certainly doesn't make everybody happy. But I think it does give us the ability to get moving now on the mandates and the standards, and to also put us in a position to have information 3 years from now if the council feels that the commercial sector is not meeting its targets, and then we'll have information in our hands to really make, I think, an informed decision. That won't make it any easier. I think the number of businesses will still be an issue. Do we, support the existing number of haulers or see the logical, what seems to be logical in every other jurisdiction is a consolidation of haulers into a fewer number. But I do think there are new elements that enter into these decisions now, including, global warming. I do commit to taking a look at the hours, parameters of hours of operation for haulers on in the business area, too. I think that is something that we need to take a look at, too, and I realize there's pluses and minuses, and I know that I'll work with OSD to vet those all and see where we go and maybe come back with a recommendation on that. But this is a good plan. I want to thank the Office of Sustainable Development staff for all the hard work they've put into this, and also thank my own staff, Amy True, for her hard work in this as well. Aye.
Potter.
Aye. Please read 553.
Update city waste prevention and recycling policy, increase fees for companies collecting solid waste from commercial accounts in Portland, and prohibit the storage of solid waste, recycling, or compostable containers in the right-of-way.
Mr. Salzman.
I believe this was the ordinance that Babe O'Sullivan referenced that basically provides updates to our ordinance to conform with our new plan. This is the first reading of that.
Question from the commissioners. Is there anyone signed up to testify on this matter?
I did not have a sign-up sheet specifically.
Is there anyone here who wishes to testify to this specific issue? Okay. It's a non-emergency and moves to a second reading. Please read the 3 p.m. time certain.
Grant revocable permits to the Portland Rose Festival Foundation to perform activities relating to Portland Rose Festival 101st anniversary celebration from May 10 through June 15, 2008.
This is the normal annual ordinance by council that allows the entire festival to happen. Today we have Sue Clerbertance and Jeff Curtis.
Oh. Bless you. Sue Clerbertance, Revenue Bureau Director. As the mayor just said, this is the annual council action that provides the permits associated with the Rose Festival. This single ordinance reflects the coordination and approval of all the various bureaus that are impacted by the Rose Festival. And the ordinance sets the stage for the normal street flags and banners, the use of Waterfront Park, and the three grand parades. In addition, this year, the city and the Rose Festival Foundation have partnered to provide additional public accessibility for the elderly and disabled and temporary bathrooms along the Grand Floral Parade route. Today, Jeff Curtis, Executive Director of the Best Festival in the World, is here to make a brief presentation.
Thanks, Sue. Jeff Curtis, Executive Director. My colleague, Marilyn Clint, our Associate Executive Director, is with me this afternoon. You're going to hear a lot about the Rose Festival in a couple weeks when we come here with our court and our annual visit, talk about the new century of the Rose Festival. I'm really here to deliver a very simple message, the message that's come down and people before me have delivered, and that is simply of a thank you, simply a thank you. The council has adopted this ordinance, and many councils before you for almost a century this has come before, and your approval of it green lights the festival. It makes it happen. So on behalf of my board, the many volunteers and citizens, the 2 million people that impact and participate in the Rose Festival, I want to say thank you. In particular, I want to provide a couple of examples of how much we appreciate the city support and certainly your leadership and stewardship of the Rose Festival, particularly last year is the best example of that. This festival, your festival, was honored as the best festival in the world. In September 2007, Marilyn and I came back, went to a conference represented by some 3,000 festival and events worldwide, and we became the best festival in the world by a lot of large standards. One is our environmental responsibility, our commitment to arts, youth, and education. All that turned into the best festival in the world. And it's something we've been building upon that led to our centennial. And last year, you gave us financial contribution that allowed us to do even more specific to those areas of focus. It allowed us to build a better parade. And one of the highlights and certainly the long-lasting legacy piece is our student film project and motion picture, From One Rose. So I'm here to say thank you for that as well. And I'll close by just talking, as we begin the new century of Rose Festival, our commitment to the community is strong. One new change is not relevant to the events you're going to see directly. It has to do with our charitable impact and our philanthropic focus is being emphasized, particularly around arts, education, environmental responsibility, volunteerism, and certainly a respect for our rich floral heritage. And that's a big focus. But at the end of the day, something 100 years ago that the festival founders continue to be proud of is that what you can really put your finger on how the festival impacts this community is really around two deliverables. The first one being economic activity, over $70 million annually because of the Rose Festival activities. And the second piece is the Rose Festival is Portland's festival. It's something that puts this city on the world map, something that people from all over the world talk about. And that's a result of your actions today and the actions before you. So I'm here just to say thanks again for your support.
Are you going to do the... Well, thank you for your kind words, and it's right back at you. Is the are you doing the...
What's Rex.
Rex.
Are you doing Rex again?
We are.
Good.
Absolutely. The big mystery.
What is it going to be?
Oh, you mean the...
Rex or... The Sir Gannis?
The King Rex. We had a festival king in the early years, 1907 through 1912, and we brought him back as part of our centennial, and he's back again.
Yeah. I was thinking T-Rex.
We will have.
When you said Rex, I was thinking T-Rex. I think you have that, too.
We do have T-Rex, yeah. Absolutely.
Sir Gannis.
You have the Jurassic Journey here.
Rex or Gannis.
Yeah.
Rex or Gannis.
Okay.
I nominated you, Commissioner Saltzman.
I think... Commissioner Leonard has a perfect costume for that.
Yeah, where's that picture? They have to have a big belly. So
this is a family affair, Mayor Potter.
It looks very exciting.
Yeah, and we'll come in a couple of weeks with the Rose Festival Court here. We'll do a major presentation of what the public can look forward to, and you'll get a sneak peek of that in a couple of weeks.
So a subject near and dear to my heart, how many restrooms do we get along the route?
Still.
How many?
Hundreds.
Really?
Wow. Really?
Lots.
Lots.
Wow.
Hundreds.
You're my favorite people in the whole world.
Hundreds?
Hundreds.
Wow. Nice. It's about time.
You're going to have a tram walk and run?
We are. In partnership with OHSU. It's a sanctioned event program. Yeah.
So do you take the tram up and walk down, or do you know?
I don't know the specifics of that. One of my colleagues.
Take it up.
Uh-huh. Oh, I could do that. Thank you.
As long as it's that direction.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, I was very pleased to hear last year when you folks won that international award as being the best festival. And I think it really brought a lot of honor to Portland, but I think what it showed also is that you folks do a great job. And your recognition by your peers, I think, bespeaks much for you folks.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Good work.
Thank you very much.
This is, did anybody sign up to testify?
No.
Is anybody here who wishes to address this issue? It's an emergency, please call the vote.
Adams?
Aye.
Leonard?
Well, I really am so excited about the parade this year. Jeff and I have had a long-standing date to meet on June 6th, the day before the parade, and walk the route. And I've been bragging up that I'm going to walk it all night long and hang out and talk to people and hopefully not get beat up.
Officer Myers will be.
Yeah, I have. Maybe I'll invite Officer Myers. That's actually a good idea, after Officer Myers to spend the evening with me. But it's really exciting. I think people are going to be excited, and it's in the restrooms. I hear more and more from people how grateful they are that we've joined this partnership to address what you would think would be a common sense thing we should have addressed long ago. But my commitment to you is from this year on. For as long as I'm here, to make sure we get the resources necessary to continue that partnership, because I think it's going to make the parade really cool and much more fun and bring a lot more people. And I couldn't be more excited. So really pleased to support this. Aye.
Potter, are you done?
I'm pleased to support this too. Aye.
Good job, folks. Thank you very much. Aye. We've got a parade.
Yay.
Nice. Please read the 315 time, sir.
Item 555, adopt and authorize submission of the Action Plan 2008-09 application to the U.S. Department of Housing and Urban Development for grants under the Community Development Block Grant, Home Investment Partnership, Emergency Shelter Grant, and Housing Opportunities for Persons with AIDS programs.
This is the BHCD's annual request to City Council to adopt and authorize submission of its annual action plan to the U.S. Department of Housing and Urban Development on behalf of the Portland Consortium, which includes the City of Portland, City of Gresham, and Multnomah County. If the plan is accepted by HUD, the consortium will receive federal resources of more than $17 million. It will be allowed to use carryover funds and program income from prior years. The federal funds include community development block grants, home investment partnership, housing opportunities for people with AIDS, and emergency shelter grant funds. Is there anybody here from BHCD?
Jamal's here. Did you want to say something, Jamal? Given that nobody's here. He looks a little perplexed.
Thank you. Jamal Folsom from the mayor's office. This is our annual action plan update that we submit to HUD to get our annual entitlement of federal funding. And we were expected to have folks here from BHCD as well as the Housing and Community Development Commission, but
we are a couple minutes.
I guess they realized.
I would point out
had a
that
long
we're about
day.
2 minutes early, so.
Oh, 2 minutes early.
Yeah, so that's it prompt. Could be that if they're on Commissioner Adams' time, they could be here at 3:30 or so.
Was this set for 3:30?
3:15.
It's about 3:13. Gotcha. So chances are they may not show, but we'll wait since it is a time certain
for 3:15.
No, I'd prefer not to, actually. I'd spare you.
Is it controversial in any way?
It's not controversial. This is fairly routine. And, I mean, well, it is routine. I mean, it comes back every year.
We're asking for money, right?
Yes. Yeah. And this is actually, it's broken down. The CDBG money is $10 million. It goes to the City of Portland. The Home Investment Partnership Program of $4 million goes to the Portland Home Consortium. Emergency Shelter Grant of $449,000 to the City of Portland. And the Housing Opportunities for Persons with AIDS goes to the City of Portland. Consortium, which includes Multnomah, Washington, Clackamas, Yamhill, Clark, and Columbia counties. That's $988,000.
Well, I'm comfortable approving.
Me too. Well, it's the first reading.
That's correct.
Actually, I think it's an emergency, isn't it?
No, it's non-emergency.
Non-emergency.
So pass to next week.
Comfortable passing it on to next.
Only because of Jamal's outstanding testimony.
That was compelling.
Too kind.
You swayed the room, swayed Jamal.
I started out against it.
It's the best I've done all day.
Okay, the second reading will be next week.
Thank you.
Thank you.